like a parent.
Thank you. I would like to call the September 16th meeting for the San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board of Trustees to order. And state for the record that the board in closed session addressed issues regarding ongoing labor negotiations. And now that we've reconvened in open session at 7:12 p.m., we'll go and move towards an agreement or change of the order of business. So first, is there anyone on the board that would like to suggest any change in our agenda tonight? Seeing none, then the agenda is as set. Approval of minutes. As there was no action taken in closed session because it was a discussion item, we'll go to the approval of minutes. And the first set of minutes is for September 2nd, which was the last scheduled full board meeting. After reviewing it, is there a motion and a second?
I move to approve the minutes of September 2nd as amended.
We have a motion by Chris and a second by Adrian. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes 7-0. Before we consider the minutes for September 9th, the special board meeting regarding an expulsion matter, there's a change. The place of the meeting was Morro Bay High School. It's listed here as the district conference room. So with that change, is there a motion and a second on that?
I'll move to.
Mark as motion second?
And I'll second.
Seconded by Marin. Yeah, but it has me here. They moved it. There's a motion by Mark and a second by Marilyn. Any discussion? Hearing none? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes 6-0. Correspondence next. At the time of this meeting when the agenda was set out, there was not any, but there have been a couple that have been received since that I want to note for this meeting. There was a fax and an attachment sent by Mr. Shanbrom, Jim Bob Shanbrom, that was presented to everybody at the board. There also was a letter from the Santa Barbara Tri-Counties Region Anti-Defamation League asking for district consideration regarding holidays pertaining to the Jewish faith, and that information was provided to Dr. Valentine. Did the board receive any other correspondence that needs to be noted? Next is our public comment period, and I have one person requesting the opportunity to present information to the board. And while Mr. Quisenberry, welcome, is going to come up, if there is anyone else, there's the forms on the back of the table that you can bring to Ms. Holmes, and she'll provide them to us so we'll know who's speaking. Jim, good to see you.
Good to see you. Jim Quisenberry from Los Osos, a teacher at Morro Bay High School. Tonight, I'm here to express my disappointment with the district administration. I feel that they have been complacent and insensitive to the students and staff at Morro Bay High School. As the school board should well know, Morro Bay High enrollment was higher than the anticipated or expected. However, this increase was noted by site administrators and counselors in the weeks preceding the beginning of school. They were telling the district office that 40 or more students above the projection had enrolled, and that MBHS needed more sections or perhaps more periods, and therefore more teachers, at least the equivalent of one FTE, full-time equivalent, perhaps more. The district was not proactive, in my opinion. It was reactive. It waited one full week into the academic year to move on accurate information from our site. Why is this a problem? The assistant principal and counselors had to make several hundred class schedule changes. Teachers had to shift students and classes. We had to re-enter class information, such as grades, or transfer papers and grades to other teachers. Every student received a new copy of his or her schedule. Currently, I'm at least a week behind schedule in correcting and recording work. Students are behind in their assignments. All of us have been treated as interchangeable cogs. This is unworthy of this district. The Board of Trustees need to make certain that it's not repeated again. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jim. The next request to present to the board is from Mr. Bob Shanbrom. Please. Thank you.
Good evening. First, I want to thank you all for your service to our schools. It's a time-consuming and sometimes trying job, and maybe I might be making a little bit more trying here tonight, but I'd like you to know I appreciate your dedication. I'm here tonight to discuss two topics, drug enforcement, which will come up later, and then a related one, and to my mind, is the problem of propagandizing our students. I know you've discussed this topic, but I want to enter this statement into the record anyway. While I'm generally satisfied with the education my children are receiving in the schools, I worry about a lot of miseducation that they also receive. I can give you other examples, but let this be the one I share tonight. I think as a society, we need to take a reality check when we find our children are subjected to the following. This is a proclamation by the President of the United States on Patriot Day 2008, and this is read to our students on 9/11 Patriot Day. I'm not going to read the whole item, but here are three excerpts. September 11, 2001 was etched into America's memory when 19 terrorists attacked us with barbarity unequaled in our history. Second excerpt. We are confronting terrorism by advancing freedom, liberty, and prosperity as an alternative to the ideologies of hatred and repression. Third item, we will meet the test that history has given us and continue to fight to rid the world of terrorism and promote liberty around the globe. Now, some Americans may believe these words to be the truth and the whole truth, but many do not. We should test these words according to a definition of propaganda. According to Cheryl Tuttle Ross, writing in the Journal of Aesthetic Education, Ross argues that propaganda can exist when the following criteria are met. Propaganda involves the intention to persuade. That's one. As well, propaganda is sent on behalf of a socio-political institution, organization, or cause. Next, the recipient of propaganda is a socially significant group of people. Finally, propaganda is an epistemic struggle to challenge other thoughts. So in summing up, I would ask, so to my mind, this statement meets all the criteria of propaganda, and I maintain that my child was propagandized in school on that day. In summing up, I would ask that schools stop teaching students what to think, but how to think. That clear standards are established for the prohibition of propaganda, or at least give chances given to refute it, to discuss it. And I'm finishing.
No, you can finish up. You have okay. The time to do that.
And I would want these standards applied regardless of whether the message came from a President Obama or a President McCain. Finally, a footnote. When I asked my wife and daughter to join me at the table, at the dining table, and read the proclamation with me, my wife exclaimed, "Oh, that's propaganda. The same I got growing up in communist China under Mao." So here's a bit of propaganda from me. Stand up and be an American. Fight propagandizing of students. The difference here is that you're not children, and you get a chance to discuss and refute my propagandizing you. So I should add that Superintendent Valentine graciously told me he agreed with my point. So having no opposition, let's figure out a way to get a fair and equal rebuttal or response to what happened to our students. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And I also want to mention to you that the information you sent to me was copied, and everybody on the board has that. And also, if you're staying to have comments regarding the item number 4, the drug use deterrence, you also have the right to speak then also. So you have said you had 2 points.
Thank you.
So thank you.
I have my light on.
Not a good idea. I mean, oh, okay. Well, go with Marilyn and then Adrian. Just be...
Well, by policy and practice, the board does not respond to public comment. We take the public comment, and we listen, and you know, we appreciate that you've come and spoken to us tonight, and believe me, we'll all be thinking about it. But I would ask Dr. Valentine if he could just explain how it came about that this occurred.
And can I ask my question too, because it relates?
Well, I want to ask, do you want that to have a public discussion now, since it's not on the agenda, or do you want it to come in a packet so it can be explained and then put on the agenda if it needs to be discussed further? Because we're getting into an item that's not on the agenda in terms of how that was disseminated.
Can I just have a question to add whenever you...
Well,
I'm just asking the question. I'm not telling you you have to.
I guess I would like to ask Ed to just to explain how that a mistake occurred, that there was no intent to propagandize.
Oh, okay. I want to add to that. Ask a question that relates.
Do you want to ask your question before Ed responds
to
Marilyn? Okay.
I read this in the email too, but I don't think it included a request to have it read. That's my question. Did it? I don't think it was, teachers were asked to read this. It was just an explanation of why the flags might be at half mast.
Yeah, and that is the explanation Marilyn, I think, is asking for, is that this was sent to individuals in the school district to remind them that this of the president's proclamation to fly the flags at half mast. Rather than simply say fly the flags at half mast, we sent the actual proclamation to it with no request that it be read to students. I think it's not an illogical thing for folks to read the proclamation, observe what the president was asking for, and actually do it in class. And in hindsight, thinking through it in that fashion, I think I would have just suggested that the flags be flown at half mast.
Okay. Any other questions?
Thank you for that explanation.
Yeah, and thank you, Marilyn. Is there anyone else tonight that wants to address the board? Well, that's what we can't get into.
Okay.
This is public comment. And, you know, if you want to ask something of a board member during a break or something, we can do that. But it's not on the agenda, so we have a difficult time getting into a discussion that's not been publicly agendized, unless I'm out of step on that. Okay. Any other members of the public that want to address the board at this time? Okay. Seeing none, we'll go on to reports. And I don't see any student representatives tonight, so we'll go to staff, administrators, board members. Mark?
First of all, I want to thank everybody that participated. Yesterday we did a budget protest bake sale, and we weren't sure whether there was going to be a state budget. I'm not sure we have one now, actually. We figured out that in San Luis Obispo County, we needed $325 million to fund public education. So we figured if we sold 325 million brownies for a dollar a piece, we could probably cover this. We had a good turnout. There were people there from PTA, from the Juvenile Justice Commission, from the Deputy Sheriff's Association, and from lots of public education agencies. So we had a great turnout, and it was a lot of fun. Second thing I'd like to point out is we've talked about the California Healthy Kids survey, and there will be a forum Thursday, September. Excuse me, this has been changed. It's been changed to October 1st at 9:45 at the Ludwig Center. And if you can get there, I would strongly recommend that you get there, because this is a response from our own students to questions about their lifestyles. And it's extremely important to see that. I know we're going to be talking about drugs in a few minutes and drug use at schools. I'd like to point out that San Luis High School is having a parent forum on Wednesday, October 8th, 6:30 to 8 at the gym. Still on. And Frank Warren is wonderful. He'll be talking, as well as Officer Adam Stanky and the Police Chief Deborah Lynn. So I thought that was rather timely. And then I did have some fun at Hawthorne's open house, and it was great to be there.
I was just going to add to what Mark said, and then Chris has a comment. I made some copies of the San Luis High School parent forum. They're on the table in the back, so if you have friends.
Mentioned San Luis Obispo High School parent forum, but of course anyone in the public is welcome to attend the forum at our school. So that's again on October 8th at 6:30, from 6:30 to 8 o'clock.
I think you just lost your mic also.
We did.
So what you're saying is, in case people didn't hear that, that even though it's indicated at the San Luis High School parent forum, it's for the entire community?
That's correct.
Okay. Coast and environs?
Anyone within listening and viewing range is welcome.
Well, I think we've lost the mic on a number of... We'll have to wait for a second. Okay, we'll wait for a second. Let's take about a two-minute break. We got it? Are we good? Okay. Thanks for doing that. Was that it, Will? Since you were muffled, part of your comment was muffled. Are there any more staff, administrators, board members that wish to make reports at this time? And we have Adrian and then Chris.
I don't think, is this on?
Yeah.
Tomorrow, September 17, is Constitution Day. And I'm fulfilling my oath of office to the last meeting, working hard as a board member, and I've enjoyed being on the board. But on that defend and protect the Constitution, tomorrow's a good day to call your representatives if you're in favor of impeachment. And I teach government this year, and the two presidents who've been impeached, the time frame was only between 2 and 4 months for both of them, so we still have time. If you're not in favor of that, you can still call your congressman and make that point. So this is not propaganda. You're welcome to say whatever you want to your congressman, but I want you to know that tomorrow's Constitution Day. The other report is that the National Education Association has endorsed Barack Obama. And there's little notices about that. It's written up in the Teachers College Record. We must put education back at the top of our national agenda. And I think we all agree with that. And that National Education Association recognizes that if our country's going to recover from the economic and social challenges we currently face, we have to invest in the education of our students. So you can read that and see if you agree or disagree with that. But I wanted to highlight National Education Association's.
Find it or not is questionable. CSBA is actively exploring ways to make sure that our students are receiving adequate funding for their educations, and so we'll wait and see what happens on that. And I think the most disturbing thing, besides the fact that the budget that was proposed is billions of dollars below what even the governors and the legislative folks say is required to even have the to have an equal budget for last year. We're about probably, I think it's $58 billion. And Russell, you might be talking about that. I think the budget would need to be about $61 billion. And so we're at least $3 to $5 billion less than what we know is required for that. And I think more disturbing than that is the notion that we could have mid-year budget cuts. And I think Russell will probably talk about that, which is a very frightening possibility for schools and actually all California. And then the last thing is that, for those of you who don't know it, the California School Boards Association has filed suit against the Algebra 1 decision and on several counts. And so we're hopeful that that decision will be rescinded.
Thanks, Chris. Walt?
Thank you. I had the pleasure of attending Morro Bay back-to-school night, and the placement of the bake sale table between the gym and the parking lot was really devious. And it worked.
Mark?
May I have permission to add one?
Oh, you can add whatever you want.
Okay.
Many things.
Many things.
Except for that, but go ahead. No, it's fine.
One thing strikes me as a little bit ironic. We have two items on the agenda tonight. One is this concept of relooking at drug testing, and the other is our, and I think most of us are here tonight, or at least in the audience, because of the drug use deterrence. But item number five is the district test results, and I wish that we could get just as much crowd to look at the district test results, because that's what we're really here about.
Okay, thank you. Any other staff, administrators, Dr. Valentine?
Yeah, Mary informed me, Mark, that the California Healthy Kids Survey Forum on October 1st is at Rancho El Choro now and not the Ludwig Center.
Okay. And then I think Marilyn and then Mr. Zotovich, Pete.
Oh, I just had one thing. I stopped in
Morro Bay High School.
Thank you. I just want to, while I respect and understand Mr. Quisenberry's comment about our schedule at the beginning of the year, I just want to thank Dr. Valentine for exceptionally quick action on that item at the beginning of the year. Traditionally, we would wait until the 10th day of school before and see how many kids we really do have before any action was taken. Dr. Valentine and his staff took action on the very first day. And we, thanks to a great staff that I have, we were able to put things in place within a matter of a week and a half. We had things moving and kids adjusting to their new schedule. So we really reacted to it fast, and I do appreciate that quick action, and I just wanted you to know that we really appreciate that support. And support was there, and it was fast, and we really got to it. So thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, Pete. Staff, administrators, board members, any other comments? Mr. Miller will discuss the state budget.
Well, it occurred at 2:30 in the morning that the...
I don't think you're on, Russ.
I'm on.
There you go. You just went now.
Mm-hmm. I don't really have much to say.
Okay.
So, as usual. The Senate and the Assembly passed a budget last night, this morning at 2:30, and sent forth to the governor something that was, as Chris described it, a get-out-of-town budget. It was full of compromise and what they're describing as the proverbial smoke and mirrors type of issues. It has some real structural deficits in it, primarily in terms of education. They were going to grant us 0.6% of a COLA in a year in which the COLA should be in excess of 5. It does end up with a shortfall of what we would be required to receive under normal years when funding's available. There's also provisions within it that does not fund COLA for categorical special ed and other programs that are supported by the districts in terms of salaries and supplies and increasing costs. So it would leave many, many districts, amongst them ours, short of revenue in terms of meeting rising costs. There are provisions within the budget which are problematic for everybody. Number one would be the lottery and the removal of lottery revenue from the education community to be replaced by a sum of money that would be placed into the Prop 98 formula and subject to COLA. And the COLA would be, instead of going to support education, would in fact be going to pay off bonds that are designed to shorten the deficit that the state is currently suffering from. Another provision of the budget which is problematic is it gives the governor veto, not necessarily veto power, the power to make mid-year cuts. And there is no more onerous and painful action on an educational organization than to make mid-year cuts, especially deep into the mid-year when you've already spent your money. And now all of a sudden the governor is going to have the power that at some point in the process he's going to determine that you must return to the state X number of dollars already granted to you. It wreaks havoc, just absolute havoc on your budget process. There's a piece that wasn't in there, and I'm not sure exactly the reasoning behind it, but the governor wanted to have the power to create, which they gave him, a rainy day fund, but he also wanted the power to spend the rainy day fund. They didn't give him that. As a result of that, I think, he's issued a statement that says he's going to veto the budget that was presented to him this morning. So all of these issues of the state budget that was passed may be moot, and it would become a vetoed budget, and I don't know that there would be enough votes to override the veto that would result. It'll turn it back into a political football in terms of, are they going to give the governor what he wants so he'll sign it, or are they going to go back to the drawing board and create something that's a little more structured, the structure of which would be a little bit more positive for the outcome of the state of California. Because what they have right now isn't going to solve the problem. It just pushes the problem 1 year more. It's something that the last 3 years has happened. 1 year more, 1 year more, and ultimately they're spending everything from the future into today and leaving nothing for the future except for the hope that there would be a year that would come along with a flood of revenues. And looking at the current financial information coming out of the United States, at the national level, the budget that the stock market, the state of California, I think we have a real problem with that kind of a hope. So we didn't get anything near the kind of budget which the education...
Basically, in our district, where would that money have to be pulled from?
Well, we have reserves, and we are unique in that respect amongst school districts in our region. But we would have to look at the different options that are available. If we did our reserves, which is basically our plan in this kind of an event, then we would soon run out of reserves if this was a continuing effort. If we decided not to do reserves but to look at programs, that would be an option too. But soon we would run out of programs. The problem with the structure that they're going to deliver to us on mid-year cuts is it's not going to happen once. It's going to be a continuing problem, which will throw our budgeting process into chaos. Instead of being able to count on spending all of our money on the kids, we're going to have to make some decision about what to put aside in case the governor gives us a mid-year cut. Otherwise, we're going to be, one, spending all of our money before the cuts come, and when the cuts come, we're either going to have to dip into our reserves or make program mid-year cuts, which... You have to remember, our budget is 85% contained within the compensation piece of paying people, and layoffs are a very long and arduous and sometimes forbidden operation. So how are we going to cut salaries? We're not. And then what do we do? It's just a problem. And we are unique. We're not in a situation that we will be devastated, at least in the first year or two of this kind of an action, but very soon down the road, we would be joining districts that have nothing and continue to have even less than nothing. Class sizes will skyrocket, situations will develop, if in fact the governor gets this ability to do mid-year cuts. The only people, well, I won't say that, but in when you consider the popularity of education amongst the voters, it ranks number one in their concerns and in their hearts. So if the politicians were to follow the hearts of the constituencies, we could say that education should be protected. But I've yet to see that happen in the many years of budget cuts and discussions.
Thank you. Mark had a question.
I just wanted to add, I did get an email today from the Legislative Action Committee from the California State PTA, and they're recommending that all the PTA members in the state contact the governor and tell him to veto this budget.
So that's in line with what Russell is saying?
That it wishes to, that would then be taken to the County Board of Supervisors. The current bylaws reflect the, I want to make sure I get the agency right, the regulations of the Fair Political Practices Commission at this time, and we believe are current and reasonable.
I think you might be losing again that. I don't know if it's a problem.
test. Board has not. Are you awake? Test.
You sound like you're making some kind of obscene phone call with voice makeover or something.
I'm losing it here. Anyway, the board has an opportunity to recommend changes to its bylaws regarding conflict of interest code. Staff, in reviewing the code, sees that it's current with the Fair Political Practices Commission recommendations. We're not recommending any changes at this time, but the board is free to suggest them if they wish, and they would be taken subsequently to the County Board of Supervisors.
Okay, thank you very much, Dr. Valentine. Yes. Walt.
Dr. Valentine, is our policy based on the CSBA model for conflict of interest, do you know?
The vast majority of our policies are. Whether this particular one is or not, I can't state. Ms. Holmes believes it is.
I think she's correct. I mean, we did a wholesale review of all these, what, 2 or 3 years ago?
Yes, we did.
Okay, thank you.
Just a quick question.
Sure, Adrian, no, that's fine.
I'm not sure this is what this means, but on number 4, it says a board member, well, this is the beginning, a board member shall not be considered to be financially interested in a contract if his or her interest includes, but is not limited to, any of the following. And number 4, that of a spouse of an officer or employee of the district, if his or her spouse's employment or office holding had existed for at least 1 year prior to his or her election or appointment. This is probably totally unrelated, but I was thinking, John, about Mrs. Spadafore and her art. I mean, maybe you don't have to not vote on that, because hasn't she been working in the district for a really long time as an artist?
Well, no, I don't vote
That's
on it.
That's different.
I don't vote on anything in terms of board action that involves any financial matters with a family member.
But I was just wondering if this means that you could.
I think I signed an agreement not to, but it
goes
beyond this, too.
Okay.
Because you have to file a con by Walt. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes 7-0. Item number 4, the drug use deterrence is going to be presented by Rick Robinette, please.
Yes. Is this on? That's too bad. I was hoping I could do this silently. Sure. Okay, thank you, members of the board. First of all, a couple of disclaimers. I've been a secondary teacher and counselor and activities director, coach, assistant principal, and principal, so I know a little bit about the middle school, high school landscape and the drug and alcohol issues that prevail there. But by presenting this item, I'm in no way attempting to share from a position of authority or legal knowledge. I just kind of got the short end of the straw from staff. And so this is just a cursory information to really jumpstart your discussion and your conversation. And second disclaimer, and I'll reiterate this again, that if it is the board's desire to further investigate any drug deterrent activities, staff would highly recommend more thorough research and to also seek the advice of legal counsel in drafting any potential policies or regulations. A couple of months ago, prompted by the initial sharing of our Healthy Kids survey results, the board asked to revisit a couple of drug deterrents, that being canine searches and random drug testing. We have existing board policy on dog searches, though it is restrictive in its application, and we last discussed drug testing 2 years ago. It was actually 2 years ago in October when we adopted a board policy on steroid prohibition. The board has the detail of these two topics in your packet, but I will kind of summarize some of that for the sake of the audience. So the first is the issue of searches using dogs, canine drug searches. Using dogs provided by either local law enforcement or private firms, and both are available in our region, for drug searches is extremely effective, and thus it's very enticing. The problem often stems not from its effectiveness, but from the privacy and potential Fourth Amendment search and seizure issues that arise. It's widely agreed that dogs cannot be used to sniff or to search individual students. But the more effective approach would be to have dogs smell lockers, desks, backpacks, outer garments, purses, automobiles that are in it. In this example, the reasonable suspicion is a result of kind of suspicionless random search, and the seizure of the property may actually be unconstitutional under the Fourth Amendment. Now, there are obviously specific arguments on either side of the issue. We have had drug dogs in our schools. We have districts in our county that use drug dogs on a frequent basis. And there are organizations such as the ACLU that have been very effective in bringing lawsuits to districts who use dogs to do anything that involves personally singling out students for searches. So for this reason, Self-Insured Schools of California, SISC, who is our umbrella risk management and insurance service, discourages the use of drug-detecting dogs and will not cover liability or injunctive relief should we find ourselves in such a lawsuit. If the board still desired this avenue, the Supreme Court has ruled that the presence of drugs on campus must be documented to be severe, and I'm not sure how severe is actually defined. The court has ruled that simply invoking the importance of deterrence is insufficient. So the second item that you asked to look at was random drug testing for extracurricular activities. It's widely agreed that a school could not do random drug testing of all students, but it is clearly legal to conduct drug testing, mandatory or random, for students engaging in extracurricular activities. The Supreme Court, in a 4-3 decision in 2006, ruled that middle and high school students do not have the same privacy rights as adults, and that extracurricular activities are elective and therefore may have those requisite requirements connected to the activity. While litigation still exists with things like false positive and discipline issues, the legality of random drug testing for extracurricular activities is pretty clear. It's legal. President Bush, in his 2006 State of the Union address, strongly advocated for all schools to conduct drug testing for extracurricular activities. The President's Office of National Drug Control Policy has extended competitive grants through the U.S. Department of Education for funding such policies. It is believed by the executive branch of government that this is one essential part of a larger approach to deterring drug use and getting students into intervention and treatment. On the other hand, there are groups and individuals that strongly oppose this approach. The American Academy of Pediatrics, the National Education Association, state before and after survey results of students show any correlation between drug usage and drug testing, that the programs that seem to be proven deterrents, such as after-school activities, are the very programs that students may choose not to participate in, that the trust and privacy issues of urine sampling does not lead to a conducive adult-student environment. The findings of false positives, which are metabolites that are found in urine samples, can cause some problems, although my understanding is the drug testing has become much more effective for this. So legal amphetamines, steroids, food substances, decongestants can be confused for illegal drugs. I apologize for some misinformation in the board packet when I stated that Templeton is the only school district utilizing random drug testing in our county. Shandon has been doing drug testing for extracurricular activities since 1998, and Paso Robles Unified School District adopted a random drug testing policy for student athletes in 2006. Last year was the first year of implementation. So in conclusion, the use of drug-sniffing canines presents some legal and privacy issues. There seem to be no major hurdles at this time should the board choose to utilize random drug testing for extracurricular programs. The issues there are more philosophic and resource-driven. And again, I'm no expert. This is just a cursory report. We have principals. We have an athletic director. We have Mr. Envick, who shared the results of our Healthy Kids survey here, and at any of them, I'm sure would be happy to help you. But at this point, I think it is best for our board to discuss the potential deterrence, and if you choose to act on one or both, that we then seek sufficient legal counsel to advise on any policy or practices. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you, Rick. And what I was going to say, if you'll stay there, because I know there'll be some questions, is I'll weave board questions for Rick and other members of the administration or staff that may speak. And if any member of the public wishes to speak, you just need to raise your hand, and then I'll recognize you so we don't have people running all over the place, stumbling on each other. So, Catherine?
In an effort to cut to the chase, I was hoping to make a motion regarding drug detection dogs. May I?
You certainly can.
Okay. In as much as the California Attorney General in November of 2000 issued a decision that schools may not use canines for drug detection, I moved to remove policy 5145.12, which presently permits the use of drug detection dogs in our district.
Adrian, to remove a section, and that was listed by Catherine. I don't remember the number. Now I'll open it up to discussion, and we'll see where that goes. And Chris, did you want to start that?
Yeah, and like I said, I'm just not sure if this is something that we should be acting on this evening without having it been noticed to the public. Since it's not an agendized item, is it something that maybe shouldn't come back? And although Dr. Valentine did send us an email with that information on it, I'd like to see that board policy in front of me before I would vote on that.
Okay, and then Walt?
Procedurally, I think Chris is correct, and I'm just wondering if it's something that after the course of this whole discussion that we could give direction to staff to come back with either an amended board policy or a recommendation that we delete that board policy. That way we can satisfy both the concerns about the Brown Act and maybe have a better idea what we want staff to do about it.
Mark, and then Catherine.
My discussion is going to go to the actual use of or not. So I think we should finish the discussion on the actual act motion.
You don't have any comment then on the motion that's before the board?
I do, but I think the discussion right now is going in a direction that we need to go in, which is can we act on this motion?
And so you want to withhold your comment? Okay, that's fine. Catherine, did you have anything that you wanted to add?
So in light of this, I should withdraw the motion.
No, you can do two things, I believe. You can withdraw the motion, and it can be agreed to by the person who seconded it, or you can modify the motion and otherwise change it and reflect what some member of the board had said, and that could be your call.
Can I just ask a question about it?
And there's a question, sure.
If the board discusses this and decides they don't want to use drug dogs, but we have a policy that allows it, then where does that leave us?
Well, I think there's truth to what Catherine has said in terms of her motion. There's also truth and depth to what Mr. Millar said, what Walt said, that if we are going to ignore a policy, it shouldn't be on the books. Because the confusion and the message in that is maybe worse than having something in the first place. So I'll go back to Catherine.
If I could withdraw my previous...
But it is, the drug dogs is on the agenda, but I guess we can just decide we don't want to talk about it even though everyone's expecting that we will?
Well, I think you can talk about it because what we are only doing now is discussing the motion.
Okay.
And if the motion dies because it's been pulled and the second has no objection to it, then we'll go back to the discussion with no motion on the table, I believe, unless somebody wants to hit me in the side of the head with a brick and say we needed to do something else. But, Mark, did you have something on that or we'll move forward? Okay. Motion's withdrawn at this point. And other questions or comments by the public? We're back into discussing item number 4. Go ahead, Mark, and then Chris.
With the small amount of knowledge that we have right now on our policy, I'd like to throw out the thought that there are times when using the dogs could be an advantage to the school district, and to remove this as a resource from the district may be detrimental. We have lots of board policies probably that we don't use on a regular basis, but we don't take them off the books because we're not using them. We keep them there because we may need them at some time in the future. And to have to then go back and reintroduce this and rediscuss it, it's on the books now. Whether we're using it or not, I don't think it's the issue. I think the issue is whether we have it as a resource and it's something in our arsenal when we do need it.
Did Chris, you want to go next, or because you were lit up for a second? You're okay? Okay. Marilyn and Walt?
Yeah, I don't know if it's wise to leave something in our board policies that isn't on sound legal footing.
Okay.
May I, John?
Sure.
Thanks. The issues with the dogs, and again, I think we all need a little more information, but as I understand the situation today, the issue with the dogs, with using the canines, is they cannot be used to approach individuals, the children, but they could be used to go out and walk along the lockers. They could be used to go out and walk along our property. They could actually be used to sniff the vehicles outside. And so with those options, we may want those at some point.
Okay, Mark, thank you. And then Walt's going to speak. And I would just say, I think, briefly, the discussion we're having now underscores the need that I believe Chris raised, that the specific wording should be on the agenda, and it should be clearly stated that the board is considering.
And I cannot remember a single drug expulsion based on a locker, I'm trying to recall. Cars, yes. Backpacks, yes, a lot of backpacks. And most of the, many of the drug offenses that we see in expulsions are derived from students coming onto the campus with marijuana usually, but we've had other kinds of prescription medications. In fact, you folks at home, keep an eye on your medicine cabinets and your liquor cabinets. Students are becoming intoxicated off the campus or in remote portions of the campuses and then coming on to the campus. Sometimes we've had situations where their intoxication has been detected, and our excellent staff, teachers and deans and principals and assistant principals, have followed up. I mean, we're not talking about hardened criminals here. These are children who are making bad decisions. And a lot of times they completely fess up to what's going on. And we backtrack, we find pipes, and we find baggies and the shrubbery and things like that. So to me, the real issue isn't about, I thought it was when I first got on the board. I'm an ex-cop, so I kind of have a certain view of things, even though that was in a previous millennium. The idea of, okay, at least we can keep our physical space more drug resistant, maybe not drug free, but more drug resistant, was appealing to me. But over the years, the situations that we observe are different than what I think use of dogs will be able to do for us. So I guess that's why I'm less than enthused about pursuing this approach. I don't think we should ever be satisfied with a board policy that's contravening the status of the law, particularly when you have an attorney general opinion about something. But I do agree that with Chris that and John that maybe this is the what to do about the policy is a secondary discussion that we can take up later. And I have other comments about the random testing, but I'll wait and let everyone talk.
Thank you, Walt, very much. Chris?
Yeah, and I would just like to follow up with something from actually yesterday's Los Angeles Times. That was Monday the 15th on the front page of the health section. There was an article talking about where people...
Oh, Rick, certainly, go ahead.
Before you leave the drug-sniffing dogs, the board policy you're referring to is the policy on search and seizure. It's only one section of it that has to do with drug-detecting dogs, as you're probably aware, and it probably, as it is written, the board policy may not have any legal implications. I mean, we can still bring dogs on campus. It's just the issue of what they're allowed to do and when students are present. There may be, as Mr. Buckman pointed out, circumstances where it'd be advisable to have dogs search a campus for any number of substances. And so it may not be a Fourth Amendment privacy issue as your board policy is written, but we'll bring it back for your discussion.
Because what you're saying is very apropos. It's a violation of search and seizure. So searching by itself without seizing something without the constitutional protection is the issue. You know, having issues with dogs also refers to explosives and other items, including toxic material. So there's a wider range of issues on a site, not just a school site, but any public site. So we can discuss that. And I was going to just mention a couple things on the issue regarding the drug testing itself, that as we discuss this, I thought could be important to consider. I firmly believe that individual rights are sacred and that as a board, we should determine if there is a necessity, if there is a clear public safety, public policy issue here for our students. So before we craft something, I think it's good to have an understanding of what you're trying to accomplish or what it is that you're trying to address. So if it's students who are performing in extracurricular activities, then that's one group of students. If it's something with a generalized decision on drug testing throughout the school or with dogs, that's a different issue, and I think we have to define that well. Which portion of the school or what element of the school setting are we most concerned with and why? The second thing is, I've seen that some of the organizations that are very supportive of testing for drug and alcohol have a financial interest. They're the ones who sell the test kits. They're the ones who make money at the labs. And I think you always have to question where the information is coming to persuade you that this is the best thing to do, because some of it is for pecuniary interest of the party that's suggesting this is good for the district, and I think we need to look at that. And the cost is also another factor. Oh, lived up to that we bring for expulsion matters. There is a code that also prevents the use and the distribution and the sale on campus, and we've expelled students for that before. There's also a student-athlete code that goes even beyond what the normal student code is, and I think we need to look at that also in terms of the effect it's had for our students. The last thing I wanted to mention is, in my estimation, the role of our district is to educate, and I think sometimes that deals with students, and sometimes that also deals with parents, adults. And I firmly believe that, and this was referred to earlier, I think Chris Adrian Walt had said this, school limits its exposure for students there to a set number of hours. And the amount of drug use at school compared to what happens with unsupervised parties, with what happens with parents who even approve the use of drugs and alcohol because of multiple reasons, and also which doesn't address where the opportunity and where the intervention can come from. I still believe families have a greater responsibility to the activities of their children relative to who their friends are, parties that are unsupervised, and decisions made in terms of intervention than school districts may or may not ever be able to do in terms of testing, et cetera, et cetera. So my sense is that if we approach this, we should look at it from such a wide spectrum in terms of education and also the involvement of the families, because I think that's where the real responsibility lies in terms of something that will change a student's direction or their choice making. Because we've all seen the drastic results of drug and alcohol with students who come before us for expulsion, but it goes on over a period of time. It affects grades, it affects attendance at school, it affects interaction with other students, it affects interaction with teachers, and our staff does an excellent job in identifying students most of the time who are down that path, and sometimes alcohol and drugs are playing a major role. So I would just say that there's a lot of issues beyond where we start at this point. Mark?
And I think as the board knows, I've been asking for time to talk about the California Healthy Kids Survey, and I'm not sure that that shouldn't come before our discussion so that we have the basis, so that we have the information that we need. There are two items out of the California Healthy Kids Survey. This is a survey that's done by children voluntarily, and they find that the results are extremely reliable. And it's been going on for about 10 years. One of the questions asked is the perceived difficulty of obtaining alcohol and marijuana, and to admit that there's an issue here and that we can help and that we can work with the families, and I agree with you, John. The other thing I'd like to point out is just it's the responsibility of the parents. And in response to the question, talk to parents or guardians about the dangers of tobacco and alcohol and drug use. In seventh grade, only 25% of the kids had talked to their parents. 25% of the children had not talked to their parents about tobacco, alcohol, or drug use. In ninth grade, a third had, and by 11th grade, only 41% were no longer talking to their parents. So there's a lot of detailed information about the depth of the problem here in the community. And you talked about the source of information being companies that tend to benefit from this financially. In a recent edition of the School Administrator, which is a publication by the American Association of School Administrators, there's a long article by a superintendent and a former high school principal who's been pushing this for a long time, who has some wonderful thoughts about how to do this. And it's just, she's not making any money. She's making some really good points. So I just think we need to spend a whole lot more time on this.
Thank you, Mark. And Adrian, then Chris?
I just had to write a marginal note when I was reading the notes. You know, PTA versus Bush. Which one would I go for? But if we want parents to support their children, you know, we want to support the parents. So if the Parents and Teachers Association is saying, I'm not sure this is really helpful, I think we should listen to that. And it's not just the PTA, it's the pediatricians, Civil Liberties Union, and all these other, even the National Council on Alcoholism and Drug Dependency are not in favor of it. But thinking about the climate that it creates, I mean, there is a negative. A spirit of trust and respect for students is an important characteristic, I think, of a good campus. And some students will not live up to that, but most do. And I think it's good to protect that quality and support parents who are trying to raise their kids to be respectful and trustworthy and not to undermine that.
Thank you. And then Chris and then Wall.
Yeah. How are we going to address this as a problem? And I wanted to thank both Mark and Catherine for bringing this up, and I'm hoping that this is the start of a discussion that we need to have about what's the best deterrence. What do we as a community do to engage in the kind of discussions and the kind of conversations that we need to have to look at the California Healthy Kids Survey and to say, is this happening in San Luis Obispo? If this survey is legitimate, which I believe it is, then we've got a problem. And what are we going to do about it? And so how do we encourage the community to engage in a conversation about drug deterrence and about our values and what's the community willing to support to try to assure that kids are drug-free? And I like Mark's suggestion that we look at the California Healthy Kids Survey, but I really do appreciate what Catherine is trying to do because she's got kids in high school. I mean, I know, you know, that your kids are that your son is probably seeing this every day. I don't know if when we get to the time for advanced agenda, if we want to say after these things, do we want to have a study session? I don't know. How can we engage the community, though? And I think that's where we need to start and then see where it goes from there.
Walt and then Catherine.
Thank you. I appreciated your comments, John. Particularly, I agree that the random testing particularly is inconsistent with the mission of our district and our schools. Additionally, it does take resources away from other programs, in the relative scheme of things. As far as the Healthy Kids Survey, you know, it reminds me a little bit of the student obesity problem. Really bad habits are developed and allowed to persist mostly at home, lack of activity, poor diet, too much sitting around watching TV, playing video games. But we're supposed to solve that problem by somehow tweaking school lunches, you know. I raised two kids in our school district, and I'm going to stick my neck out here a little bit, get their pot from other kids in our school district. You know, the idea of the guy with the, you know, the snap brim hat and lots of bling pulling up on campus in a lowrider or something is just not what's happening. It's Johnny and Timmy and Susie living down the street from your kid, or maybe your kid. Slinging is it was a common term that's used, and basically it means a kid supports their drug habit by selling drugs to other kids. Alcohol, the phrase I was taught by my sons, is pulling a handle, which refers to the handle on a half a gallon of booze. And basically you get a homeless person to go in and buy it. I mean, it's so this availability issue is a community issue. And I'm not sure that we can come in and cure these societal community problems. All we can do is influence the outcomes by doing the best we can to create and mold students who are problem solvers, independent thinkers, and understand the consequences of the decisions that they make. I would like to say that our teachers are amazing. The times that they have stuck their necks out to grab a kid who they believe is intoxicated and get them into the office and have the rest of the process go through is really remarkable, because it's a hard call to make. I mean, I was a policeman for 10 years, and sometimes you just, you know somebody's a little, you know, might be a little off or something, but then you've got to make the decision, okay, do I want to stir up everything by deciding that I think this kid's in trouble and needs to have some action taken? And many times the teachers have intervened and done that, and the kid goes to an expulsion hearing, and hopefully, excuse me, we influence the outcome positively. I also think that the random testing, we are subjecting some of our finest students to, you know, a fairly demeaning process. I mean, sure, you buy into it if you want to play football or you don't want to go out for the cheerleading or something, but those are some of our best, and I just think that we shouldn't become an institution that...
There's a problem, and I would refer you again to the Healthy Children Survey that says that our survey of freshmen and juniors in our district shows that 24% of our students report that they are current users of marijuana. In my book, one out of four children in our schools on a daily basis presents a problem to teaching, to learning, and that's why we're here, to address that problem. And if it takes a village to raise a child, I think it takes an entire district of concerned adults, parents, teachers, to raise a teenager. Once they leave your home as a teenager, they are under the influence of peers first, coaches sometimes second, and teachers. And so we form a coalition, and I'd like to see us use all of our resources to make sure all of our students are living and learning healthfully and getting the most out of the experience we can offer them. And I would just like to say that I know that we have people in the audience here who would probably like to get their 2 cents in, too, as long as they're here.
Yeah, they just have to raise their hand, and we'll get there, and then we'll get that in a second. I think Adrian's been waiting, and then Mark, and then I'll call people up from the public also. Thanks.
A couple of things. One thing it mentions in that Healthy Kids survey is that one of the most effective parts of a successful student is a relationship with a caring adult at school. So working on things like that, like making sure there aren't any kids who are being overlooked in every classroom, you know, and teachers aren't really speaking to them personally for some reason. I know we have teachers here who are so great at making all their students feel like human beings and listening to them. But part of that is the whole climate of the school. Is there any one thing we could look at is there anything about our academic program that's either not engaging students or putting so much pressure on them
that they are needing some kind of substance to feel more relaxed or whatever because it's so much stress for some reason at school. I think that would be a legitimate thing for us to look at.
What I'll do is have Mark and then Marilyn, and then we'll get everybody in the pub.
That was a random test.
Okay. We have a suggestion, which I think is a good idea. Let's take about a 5-minute recess. So we're all set to go? We're good. So what we'll do is we've got Marilyn and then Mark. Actually, it was Mark and then Marilyn.
It's fine.
Okay, Marilyn, then Mark, and then we're going to go to the public. So thank you for being patient. We're all set. Marilyn.
Okay. Couple of things. A point of clarification, Mr. Robinette. Did you say that Shandon tests athletics?
Yes.
Do they test other extracurriculars?
I don't believe so. I think Shandon, Templeton, Paso Robles all do sports, athletics only.
Okay. You know, I agree that drugs and alcohol are a problem in our schools as they are in schools everywhere. And I don't know what the solution is, but I agree with my fellow board members who believe that this is a community problem. It involves parents as well and families and needs to be addressed as such. My feeling 2 years ago really hasn't changed in large part. I have a great concern that if we preclude students from participating in athletics, we may be taking away their only buy-in to school. That we have lots of students who are not academically connected to school, may not be socially well connected to school, but find a reason to go because they participate in athletics. And even if they, I think a case could be made, why are you choosing to test one group of extracurricular participants and not other groups? So if we test athletics, I think it would, if we were to make the decision to drug test, I think it would only follow that in addition to athletics, we would be testing French club and band, choir, Latin club, chess club, anyone who participates in any extracurricular activity provided through our school district. And I think there would be a lot of pushback from the parent community on that. I suspect that there would be. Anyway, thank you.
Thanks, Marilyn. Mark, and then we'll go to
thank
the
you,
public,
John.
Please.
And I'd love to get to the public as soon as possible, so I have just 4 quick points. One, we always need to remember that the Healthy Kids Survey is not a survey that is about the schools. It's done in the schools because that's where we have the kids happen to be on a given day, and we can get them all together, and we can give the survey. So it is a community, it's a community survey, and schools are part of the community, so we're going to have to be part of the solution. Two, what I've heard from children, from some of the students and some of the student athletes is, giving random drug tests will give me the excuse I need to say no to peer pressure, and I can say I don't want to risk my whole career because I don't want to be subject to a random test. 3. In some of the research that I was able to read about school districts that do this, it becomes not a punitive thing, but more of an aid. And so students are not kicked off a team. They lose 30 days, and they're given a lot of support, and their families are given support. And my last point is, this is really not about random testing. Random testing is not the issue. What the issue is drug and alcohol abuse.
Thank you, Mark. And then we'll start with the public. And if you would just identify yourself for the audience in the community, and we'll go. Thank you.
Rick Ernst, I'm recently retired school teacher. And it feels really good. First day of school, I went out to breakfast with my wife and enjoyed bacon and eggs in Pismo Beach and thought very little about my classroom. My primary comment was just mentioned by Ms. Pallone, making sure that I knew who the new kids are so I can make sure they swim. But I would like to approach this from a point of peer pressure. Most of the kids who are involved in using alcohol, who are going to a party with their friends, or they're smoking dope, they didn't necessarily intend to go get high. But when they're standing there with their friends, it's really hard to say no. Peer pressure is incredible. And if they had the opportunity to say, as Mr. Buckman just said, look, there might be a test of the members of my team this week. I don't want to risk it. And there are other tests besides urine samples, a hair follicle. That's not too demeaning. And whatever is being used is in there for a long time. It's not just what happened last night. And if you look at our elite athletes, from the 14-year-old diver in the Olympics to Dara Torres at 41, those people are being tested constantly, and not in the comfort of coming to the doctor's office. They knock on their door at 2 o'clock in the morning and say, we want a sample. And you can't say no.
Thank you very much, Rick. Any other members of the public that would like to? Sure. Come on up, Bob.
It's the whole big issue. Well, I'm glad this issue came up. I have a sixth grader, and it's about time, I guess, I got educated on this topic a little bit. And I really appreciate what I've heard of most of the board tonight. Particularly what Chris said made me think, you know, these kids are victims. They're the last, they're at the final moment about to be punished for a process that brought them down. And the idea that it takes a community is a good one, but that's not what's proposed here tonight. What's proposed here is not using a community approach, but using a Gestapo approach, and I don't think that's the way to deal with children. I did a little research this afternoon, and I found Joseph Califano, who was the Secretary of Health, Education, Welfare when it was called Health, Education, Welfare. He's been working on this. He's a professor at Columbia. He's been working on this for about 30 years. And something he found out was so simple. This is just amazing fact, that families that have dinner together 5 nights a week or more have kids that are 2.5 times less likely to use marijuana action as strongly as possible, including whatever legal means would be possible or recommended would be another good approach. Finally, in relation to my earlier topic tonight about the propagandizing of our children and the political direction this nation is taking, is this is a similar approach in drug testing the kids to one that we seem to be carrying out throughout our country, which is militarization on all levels. For example, illegal immigration. We militarize the border. We send thousands of border patrolmen there, build a huge wall, way bigger than the Berlin Wall, instead of simply going after the illegal employers. Terrorism, well, I don't want to touch on that too heavily, but there's another example of where, rather than trying to understand the underlying problems and deal with them on a fundamental basis, we've simply militarized that issue. And then now drugs seems to be going in that same vein.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any other certain? Vic, Mr. Eklund?
Hi, I'm Vic Eklund, athletic director at San Jose High School, and I just want to share a few comments from our coaches. Now, basically, our coaches are in favor of some type of drug testing, but again, they're concerned is just not to pick on the athletes completely, but basically across the board. Not a punitive type of test, no punishment involved. Basically, but more or less to help the kids, not a witch hunt to search out anybody that uses drugs. If somebody were to be caught with a positive test, not to throw them off a team, but to just have a counseling session with them, with the parent, the principal, the athletic director, teacher, somebody in the community, and talk about maybe if there is a problem involved, and let them go back and participate and practice, and no punishment whatsoever. At all, except try to solve the problem. Just give the kids a reason to say no, basically, is what it would do, and go from there. And just basically seek help for any individual that may test positive, but there again, not to punish them.
Okay, thank you very much, Vic. Is there anyone else? Certainly. Thanks very much, Mr. Angel. Any other members of the public? Certainly, Bruce.
I'm Bruce Bedrigan, president of the Teachers Association. But I'm really speaking here as a parent and as a teacher and a past coach for 20 years. We've been here before. 2 years ago, if you recall, the board brought this issue forward. And I think the board was pretty well convinced that random drug testing was the way to go. But after listening to our former aide, athletic director King Schofield speak and other teachers and coaches speak, that the board changed their mind. They kept an open mind and said, you know, this is not the best way. We'd rather go with educating our students and our coaches and our parents and our teachers, and that's the way to go instead. You know, San Luis Coastal School District is well respected amongst districts. I think we got to keep in mind that the way we go could influence other districts also. We send a message to our students, and many of the points were well taken on both sides of this issue on our board, but I really believe that we send a message to our students that says, when we randomly test them, we don't trust you. That instead of they're innocent until proven guilty, we're taking a different approach now. We're saying, you know what, we don't trust you, so we are going to go ahead and test you. And I think that's the wrong approach. As far as peer pressure goes, there's peer pressure going both ways. Peer pressure not to go ahead and do drugs. And that relationship that the coaches have with their athletes is one of those that, hey, we're a team and we've got to be supporting each other. And as far as the kids that are using drugs, other kids, yeah, you know, our schools are microcosms of society, so absolutely. You know, there's going to be kids that are using drugs. But the kids that are using drugs in school, the serious users, they don't play sports. They're not clubs. They're not doing music or these other activities. No, then those aren't the ones, and those are the ones that are not going to be tested. So we're not going to get at that. So what we're really talking about here is talking about going after the fringe kids, the kids that are sitting on the fence. And for me, and I think other coaches and teachers will attest to this, those are the kids you want on the teams, in the clubs, in FFA. Those are exactly the kids you want, because they're trying to make up their mind, and you want them around your best students. You want that positive influence, so when they're vacillating and they're walking, sitting on that fence trying to...
His recollection was that conversation had to do with anabolic steroid use, and that the coach from Morro Bay, who is retired now, Mr. Knightley, I think... He spoke against it because he just didn't feel that was a problem, the anabolic steroid use and performance-enhancing drugs. And I did have a chance to speak with Coach John Andre from Morro Bay High School today, who would like to have been here but had a volleyball game to supervise. And I would say that his comments to me echoed what Vic Eklund said here tonight, which is that he would be in favor of something along the lines of testing if, in fact, it was rehabilitative as opposed to punitive. And and it was a way to bring kids into the program, keep them in the program as opposed to exclude them from the program, as you raised as a concern, Marilyn. And we have a prototype in Templeton to look at the way it's working there and how it's working, and then to modify it for however we would think would work best for our own district. I did have a chance to speak with Christina Bolt there, who administers the program. It's not administered by the coaches. That's the interesting thing about that is it has nothing to do with coaches being in any kind of role of enforcement. It's done by an administrator at the school. It's done there with a great deal of respect and privacy. That all those issues can be addressed as those are raised. But they and the cost issues are surprisingly nominal per student. And I hope that what we can do here tonight is agree on at least the need to continue the dialogue with each other and with the public to continue looking at whether this is a way to address the problem that we all seem to recognize that exists.
Okay, thank you, Catherine. I was just going to mention before we go on with the other people who are ready to speak, I have a hunch that during advanced agenda tonight, there probably will be a suggestion and a discussion whether this comes back as an agenda item or a study session, and then develop what that will look like. So with that in mind, knowing that this probably isn't the end of the discussion but the beginning of the discussion, headed into something else, I'll call Walt and then Adrian and then Dr. Valentine, please.
Thank you, John. I guess I am open to considering some kind of extracurricular activity-related testing, but I would feel more comfortable with that. It's good for a program perhaps to be non-punitive, but by the same token, there's got to be some response. And perhaps as we end up in expulsion hearings often, we try to craft a response that basically uses the threat of expulsion to motivate and help arrange for support and outcomes for the student that are different than just punish. Expulsion hearings, we're not there to punish the student. We're there to figure out how to correct the behavior and help the student be successful. So there has to be some kind of response. I don't think either of those two concerns regarding some sort of buy-in by a group to testing would preclude me from being able to support it, depending on how it rolled out. I'm very interested in the community collaboration piece. I know that the community, San Luis Community Foundation, a lot of groups in this community are already working on this problem, and I'm wondering if it is somewhat analogous to the visual and performing arts thing, where we have a lot of resources out there in the community. We're trying to deal with some of the same issues in-house, and I would like to see us explore that community articulation, community collaboration piece of it.
Thank you, Walt. Adrian and Dr. Valentine.
One thing that occurred to me in the comments of, we don't want to punish people, we're going to work with them. I know that our people we see in expulsion hearings have violated clear and defined things of being under the influence at school or having substances with them. But I think we would want to be careful about sort of unconscious institutional racism or classism, where our athletes and these fine students who are doing these extra things are kind of sheltered and nurtured and things are overlooked a little more with them than other students. Just to be aware of and make sure we don't fall into that pitfall.
Thank you, Adrian. Dr. Valentine, then Catherine.
Yeah, just I want to thank the board for this conversation, because I think it hits at an issue that touches all of us, touches us as professionals in education and touches us as parents as well. And I think it's clear that there are no simple solutions. Without weighing in at this point on either side of the drug, in some ways a pretty drug-savvy environment. Probably more so than the average living room and the average dining room table, that it's one of the few places in the community where virtually no youth activity goes entirely unsupervised, no formal youth activity goes unsupervised, where people are entrusted with responsibility for delivering the message pretty personally of the unwiseness of choosing to use drugs, and where there are truly consequences and people looking out for kids who are displaying any of the symptoms of drug or alcohol use, that were the same kind of vigilance and watchfulness being exercised at the parties of the community and at the homes and at the various social gatherings that exist in the community, that actually we would have a better handle on the drug problem than a worse handle on the drug problem. So I just want to at least cast send out some positive thoughts about the fact that we take this very, very seriously as the school. We take our responsibility as part of the village in the raising of our children very, very seriously, and we're certainly open to other suggestions that will improve that. I would also add that the opportunity to do mandatory non-random drug testing exists in every family in our community as well.
Thank you, Dr. Valentine. Catherine?
I just wanted to share a couple things that might answer some of the questions that were raised here that I've learned just in the last few days. The reason the Shandon and Paso Robles and Templeton have made this about their athletes as opposed to their entire extracurricular activities is, one is there is a legal definition of it cannot be a co-curricular activity. So things like FFA and Latin Club and things that are related to a class, those are excluded. So it hasn't been tested. The legality of those have not been tested. So that's the one thing you have to be careful of. And the other reason they choose athletes, they say, is that because of the sheer number of athletes in any given school, you're more likely to have a representation that's more of a cross-section of the population of your school. So you're not isolating one group over another. And I'm adding this, my son realized it, but they actually do agree to that. So they've already entered into the agreement. It's only the matter of testing. So I want to share that with you.
Okay, Catherine, thank you very much. And Walt?
Just a quick comment. And Catherine, that was very helpful. I appreciate that information. It just kind of triggered a recollection or appreciation in my mind. You know, the peer pressure is an important aspect of this. But the media cultural pressure is overwhelming. Anybody catch Seth Rogen's new movie, Pineapple Express? You know, it makes Cheech and Chong look like they were wrestling with their addiction. There is a big cultural influence out there, and you almost feel like you're bailing against the tide.
Thank you, Walt. Will. Come on up.
Good evening, everyone. Will Jones, principal at San Luis Obispo High School. And since the microphones are working now, I want to take one more opportunity to promote our forum, our parent forum at San Luis Obispo High School on October 8th at 6:30 until 8 o'clock. And all are welcome. I've been listening very carefully to all the comments I've heard tonight, and I appreciate the different points of view that I've heard. I've been an educator and a parent in this community for 27 years, and I think this is a very serious topic that we're discussing, and I have, while I kind of, in theory, I can understand why it's attractive for us to consider drug testing, in practice, I have a lot of reservations about it, and I don't want to take the time to go into listing what all those reservations are tonight, but I personally think this is a serious enough decision that despite the good intentions of the school board and whatever level of education you might be able to accumulate in the coming weeks or months, however long it takes, I really think this is a huge community issue that we would be wise to listen very carefully to what our parents and our students say, and that in fact we would try almost to form some kind of a majority opinion coming from that community before we took this step. I think it's that big of a concern, that big of an issue. We have discussed this as a community issue rather than as a school issue for as many years as I've lived in San Luis Obispo and been a parent and educator. And I really think it's imperative that we get as much input from the community as possible before we make a decision about this. And it's imperative to get that community input. If I interpret your question correctly, it hasn't come up about not having it since we don't have it. But if we're considering it, then I think it's important that we hear from as many people as possible and really do listen to that that community opinion about this issue.
Thanks, Will, very much. There's no other questions pending right now, and this is not an item that requires a vote or anything, but I was just going to ask if it's the – I would ask for the indulgence of the rest of the board members to move this item now to advance agenda while we have people here so we can identify what the board senses is the best way to proceed so everyone who's here can also understand where we think we want to go with this now instead of waiting to the end of the meeting when we normally talk about advanced agenda. And if I don't hear any big objection, and you can cut the mics if I give that signal, no, I would entertain that we move this item to the advanced agenda now so everyone here in the public who may involve themselves in the future will know where we're headed. And I'll start with Walt and come down this way.
I would like to see an advanced agenda, perhaps study session, but I think we need to broaden it out, and I think the Healthy Kids Survey gives us a great vehicle for exploring these things. I would love to see a turnout like we had for EL studies, and I think Dr. Matakovich had a lot to do with that, with the way it was structured. And I think it gives us an opportunity to really get at it. If we get enough advance notice out there to the public about what is in the Healthy Kids Survey, I think we could fill the house.
I think what we'll do is we'll just come down this way and let all the board members make comments about agenda item, study session, and Adrian.
Well, since I'm not in favor of random drug testing, I would rather see a broad spectrum forum on how can we address the problem of students and drug use in our community and just get some positive suggestions.
So when you say forum, you're talking about a study session which we can establish. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, something like that.
Okay, just to make sure. Chris?
Yeah, I think...
Wait for a second. Okay, go ahead.
Following our discussion of the California Healthy Kids Survey, which I believe is coming up shortly, I would support a broader-based discussion for the community, as Adrian has suggested and Will has been talking about, and Walter. And I think a discussion like that, if we're going to be focusing on the community, could include folks from the county of San Luis Obispo.
By the district, the board, the teachers, the administrators, and the parents, to entertain the idea that there would be a bigger format, a larger setting for this. Because I think that the existence of denial has been present for many years regarding this survey, and it's something that hasn't really been discussed in a large setting. It's been discussed by groups individually, but I think as an educational organization, which we are, I think to show the courage to establish something to discuss this in a wide range of issues is something that should be respected, and I think that's a great idea. And I would even suggest if we establish it as a study session that we consider doing it in a place that may have a larger audience availability, right. Maybe even Cuesta College, so it gets an impression that it's a community-based discussion, not just the San Luis School District that's dealing with this issue about having dogs on campus or having drug testing of athletes or other. I think that this is something that if we're going to put the effort and have our staff put the effort in, that we would want to encourage everybody in the community to come forward and participate and provide their insight, including the parents, law enforcement, the medical field, because I have many friends who are in the ER department who will talk about what happens late at night when they see students being brought in from various schools with multiple problems on binge drinking and other issues. So I support a study session.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. Oh, sorry.
Marilyn.
Well, I too support a study session, and I appreciate everyone who did come tonight and speak to us. As I said, I believe it's a larger issue, a family and a community issue, not just a school issue. for myself, it will take a lot of information that I don't already have and very persuasive argument to get me to support drug testing of our students. So I am certainly open to involving the community, and I look forward to that. What some other districts may elect to do with regard to drug testing, really, as far as I'm concerned, doesn't have a lot to do with us. I respect all of our surrounding weekly expulsion hearings in this school district, and I want to be very clear with the public and the people who are here tonight that we do not see that many students in expulsion hearings in this district. Relative to the number of students that we have in secondary school, we may see, and Dr. Matakovich can certainly provide this information better than I can, we may see 25 students a year maximum, half of that, 12 students a year come forward for expulsion hearing. So no one should leave this meeting with the impression that although those 12 students are very important to us and we work hard as a board to try to craft the best possible outcome of that hearing for the student, we are not deluged by students on the verge of expulsion. I've totally lost my train of thought. What I want to say is that while our sister district Templeton may take a harder line with regard to drug testing, they also take a different approach to expulsion than we do. From what I've heard, they are a little more black and white on the issue, where we try to work with the student. So it's just indicative of different bents. I welcome dialogue with the community, with parents and doctors and anyone else who wants to be involved. I mean, these are our children, and their behavior is reflective of our society as a whole. Thank you.
Thank you, Marilyn. Mark.
Thank you, John. I want to thank my fellow board members. Months ago, when we first got the early look at the California Healthy Kids Survey, I asked to have this as a future agenda item, and I'm feeling very satisfied that we're going to take a really good look at this finally. Thank you. I like you all. So I think this is really, really important. There are at least 10 years of research behind the Healthy Kids Survey right now. There are best practices out there available by the agency that performs this. I'm not sure where I stand particularly right now, whether I would take a vote right now on random testing, but I know that I don't.
Maybe elements of it we choose. We have many choices. My only hope would be that the study session is a great idea in terms of getting the community input. I just hope that it doesn't result in a lot of talk and no action, because this is a problem that requires some action and it requires some courage. I'm very much in favor of the study session, and shall I make a motion?
I think all you have to do is indicate that there's more than two board members and a majority of the board. And I was just going to say there doesn't need to be a motion and a vote. We're fine with the sentiment that's expressed here tonight. It appears clear that the vast majority of the board, if not a unanimous board, is asking for the study session. I think from this point on, we will follow the development of the study session item, whether we identify it as a community issue, substance abuse, however we're going to develop it, who will be there, the topics, the questions, and that'll be developed as we go forward to establish the date, time, and place. So I see there is no inconsistent sense of anyone here that's going to not support that. Okay? Good. Yes, sir. Martin.
I almost made it out without saying anything. Just as a point of interest, you mentioned about involving community in a lot of different agencies. I don't know if you're familiar with the Children's Services Network or not. But I think that's a great forum. Involves County Office of Education, Department of Social Services, Sheriff's Department, on and on and on, EOC. And I was a visitor at the last meeting, and they were discussing a lot of these same subjects, methamphetamine use, teen pregnancy, and how are they going to collaborate with agencies throughout the county.
You know, I was going to suggest also, and I think everybody may be or may not be aware of this, your ideas and suggestions can probably go to Dr. Matakovich, because there will be a development of the participants and who will be brought into this discussion. So hopefully we'll get to all those groups plus more. So thank you for that.
Very good.
Thank you, Martin. Seeing no other members of the public and no other comments by the board or administration, it's time to move on to number five, district test results in language, arts, and math, district accountability progress report. And I want to thank everybody who was here from the public tonight for coming as you all leave. Dr. Matakovich, do you need help with that overhead? Or do you want a little assistance?
I think I'm hello.
Because I can use my gavel to bring somebody to the forefront here to work with you.
I think I've got it.
Okay.
Kind of is highlight our test results and then speak to our accountability reports. And I need to say Mrs. Dellis-Camp would be here tonight, but she's very, very ill with the flu that's going around. So I'm her stand-in, and so I hope you'll bear with me. All right? You have our test scores in chart form in your board agenda by grade level. They have to do with this content standards tests, which are derived from our academic standards with data reported by percentage, by percentages of our students' performance ranging from far below basic to advanced. I'd like to highlight some of our observations. In language arts, the proficient and advanced average percentages across grades 2 through 11 have basically remained pretty steady. Our proficient and advanced average percentages, however, surpass the county and the state averages. In the area of mathematics on the content standards test in grades 2 through 7, the proficient and advanced average percentages also have remained steady over the past 3 years. Our proficient and advanced average percentages for grades 2 through 7 equal or surpass the county averages and surpass the state averages. So we're proud of how our students are doing on our content standards test. Though if you look closely at our Algebra 1 result for grades 7 through 11, we have 37% proficient or above. This surpasses the county average, which is 29%, and the state average at 25%. But we're really not satisfied with this, because what we see is a trend with Algebra 1, and we're concerned that our advanced, the percentages of proficient and advanced students in this area are tending to decrease. We have seen that we have moved a significant number of our students into algebra. For example, in the eighth grade, we've increased the number of students participating in algebra by about 100 students, and we think this might be a contributing factor to the fact that our test scores are declining. We feel this is a definite area of study in the area of mathematics, and it's also been defined as a countywide issue. So we hope to be addressing that in this year relative to the performance of our students in Algebra 1. In geometry, our results in grades 8 through 11 at 41% surpass the county average and the state average. And our Algebra 2 results also equal the county average and surpass the state average. So content standards test-wise, generally flat results, though we are maintaining proficiency levels that are at the county level or above the state. On another assessment, the CalFICS, we hit the 68 percentile range. So our average student in the seventh grade did as well or better than 68% of the students across the nation in mathematics. Very respectable. At our last meeting, or at your last meeting, we talked about our Title III annual measure achievable objectives for our English learners. And we reported to you that we had met our first two objectives. Now, with these test results, we have our third objective. And I'd like to share with you, whoops, right side up. Mary. Here we go. One more time. Third time's the charm. Okay. With this annual measurable objective in language arts, we are finding that our district, relative to the percent proficient students in language arts district-wide, has remained pretty constant. With our English learners, we've shown an increase in terms of the proficiency rate by about 3.5 percentage points. The target is 34% proficiency rate for all of our English learners. This is an area that we did not meet our target relative to our English learners, and it's an area that we're going to need to continue to address. Okay. So if I may go on with our accountability report, these test results, along with our high school exit exam, which, as you saw reported in the newspaper, we had a countywide high of 94% of our 10th grade students passing the high school exit exam. This provides data for our this student performance data provides data for our district's adequate yearly progress report. As you know, under No Child Left Behind, we have requirements to meet. There are four requirements, and I would like to address each one, if I may. I'd like to start with the first requirement, participation rate. The target rate for participation is 95% of the population taking our assessments. We had a district rate. The target, as I mentioned earlier, is 34%. As you can see from our five-year history, we have a consistent trend with our district results, and we are now at 65% proficiency rate. However, if you'll note on the chart, our English learners are at 20.5%, and our Hispanic students are at 33.3%. These students are the focus of our strategic plan, and you have increased our resources, and we hope to be showing improvement with our English learner students. If I may, I'd like to show you a little chart that we put together. Because what's important, even though we aren't making our 34% target in language art, we need to be showing that our students are improving. This chart that we have here shows our English learners, which is the bottom line, and they are gradually increasing the number of basic to advanced students over time. So, and this chart might be a little easier for you to look at. We are showing an increase in the percent of our English learners who are achieving basic or higher status. And as well, we're seeing a decline in the percent of students who are achieving far below basic and basic scores. So the trend is to lessen the numbers that are in the basic and lower area and increase basic to higher areas. So we're seeing that movement, and that's a tribute to the staff and their work. I know it's in little increments, but we are hopeful that we are on target in terms of addressing the needs of our students. In the area of mathematics proficiency, our target was 34.6%. Our district overall average was 62.9%. With all subgroups, we were able to accomplish that, except our English learners. they are at the 28.8 percentile. So again, we now have a rating of 824. And as you can see from our five-year trend, this is our top score. 13 of our 15 schools have met their school-wide API growth targets. We're proud of that. As well, our district numerically significant subgroups have increased their API scores as well. So we're proud of the fact that with all of these subgroups that affect our scores, we are showing definite progress in terms of their ratings on their APIs. So if I may go back to the requirement chart, I've just talked about requirement three that has to do with our API, and we've met that criteria. We have a requirement, a graduation rate indicator that says we should be at the 83% range. We exceeded this with a 97.3 range for our graduating class of 07. Looking at these indicators, what we have realized is that we've met 27 of the 30 indicators that have been given to us, and unfortunately, because we did not meet them all, we are now going to continue to be identified as a program improvement district. We are identified as a program improvement district for year three, and what that means, is that we must meet state and federal requirements over the course of this year. There's a state requirement that requires us to participate with technical assistance, and we work hand in hand with the County Office of Education to provide that support. As well, there are a series of workshops available to district and school staff, and we are signed up for all of them. There are multiple sessions across the county and state, and we plan to report to you what we learned from those workshops. Also, we are to notify our parents and the public of our program improvement status and development, specifically targeting our English learners. And our staff is participating in a certification program, which you have voted to include in our strategic plan, and we appreciate that. We also have a goal to develop ourselves as professional learning communities, and our weekly teacher collaboration time will allow for those professional learning communities to thrive. So we accept the challenge that's before us. We are in program improvement, but we have a staff that's committed to this purpose. We appreciate your support, and just know that we're committed to making improvement. So if you have any questions, we're available to answer them, and thank you.
Thank you very much, Mary. Dr. Matakovich, for that presentation, and I'll entertain questions. Chris first, and then Mark.
One question I have, I realize that the AYP is continually increasing to, what, 100% proficient, or by, what, 2014, which, of course, that's the Lake Wobegon, all kids above average argument. One thing that I am wondering about, when we say steady, is that really another way of saying that we're really reaching our average and what we can expect our average to be? Given those conditions?
Yeah, I think if you look at a population of students as being absolutely steady itself, and that the scores for that same population year in and year out reflect similar scores, I think you would say that it's a flat performance and we've reached our average, per your question. The things which affect the answer to your question differently is if the population changes from one year to the other, as to whether the score from one year is truly comparable to the score from another. We are increasing in the number of students and the number of children who are learning English in our school district, while at the same time the total number of students in our school district is declining. What that translates into is that the effect of the scores of English learners is greater and greater on the overall scores of our school district. And we find ourselves in a place where, with a higher representation of students who are facing the challenge of learning English in the school district, and at the same reach a critical mass where, in fact, they're influencing the scores more than kids of advantage are affecting the scores.
One more question, if I could get a brief answer on this. Not that your answer wasn't brief and well thought out. One thing I did notice when going through the scores, it looks like there's consistent trends of, say, between second and third grade, we're seeing a decline in the scores. Between seventh and eighth grade, we see a decline in some of the scores. However, between eighth and ninth grade, we see increases in scores. And I kind of looked at that, and I was just wondering if you had a thought on that.
Well, we're looking at the content that's assessed on the test, and we see that between grade levels, there is a different level of content being assessed. And so we need to look at that. We're seeing that trend across the county, a la the algebra situation. So we just need to look in that a little more deep.
And Mark, and then Adrian.
Yep. I'm really glad to hear that the district is recognizing this flatness that occurs when we look at the far below and the basic, and then we look at the proficient and above, because it's consistent all the way throughout the district. And so I'm looking forward to hearing more of the innovative plan, some things that we'll go. I mean, we've been doing the test now for 7 years. Mm-hmm. We've seen the flat for 7 years, and so I'm hoping to hear about some of the more of the innovative programs that we're going to do.
Adrian?
I continue to be amazed and impressed with how public schools put the most positive efforts and face on unfortunate situations like no funding, No Child Left Behind, which has impossible expectations. And, you know, teachers and principals and administrators continue to, you know, work for what's best for students and try innovative teaching and just work their hardest to have positive environments and everyone's working their best. And I think that deserves a lot of credit and applause. A couple other points I want to make. They have, or when it's anticipated that schools would have complete control over rising test scores, you know, that's just really not fair because there's so many other things that go into learning. And the question that you brought up about who's making money on drug testing applies also to academic testing. These people mandating all these tests have buddies and cronies who are making tons of money on all this testing that's being done. And you look at a school calendar, there may be 1 month set aside for STAR testing when you look at academic calendars. So it's a big impact in the school year. And I also wanted to bring up that, you know, all of us are looking at test scores so carefully in the community and on the school board and many people. But who's looking at the tests? I mean, we make such a big deal about the scores, but we don't even know what the tests are. How many school members, board members, have actually, you know, read through tests? And you're not allowed to, as we all know, because the teachers sign this document that says...
Don't answer that.
You go to test jail, you go to STAR jail. STAR chamber.
Well, I, of course, have since I give tests, and there's a lot of criticism about these tests. So, you know, do not put too much attention and effort and emphasis, in my view, on these scores. The fact that they show that the schools are trying so hard, as I was saying, and doing a stellar effort, I think that's the one thing that you should take out of it. And, you know, with all these little fluctuations and they're not going up and all that is, I don't think it's significant. I think that there's so many other ways to assess how effective education is and what kids are learning and outcomes. And so let's don't get too hung up on the test scores.
Thank you, Adrian. Dr. Matakovich, thank you very much for the presentation, because I think one thing that Adrian brings up, which you see all the time in this district, I think the determination and the will exhibited by the administration about the direction in terms of closing the achievement gap and helping the students and what the teachers do in the classroom to identify issues, assess, and to help students in specific ways with reading, math, and more is not indicative of what you'll find on a number on a piece of paper.
On the API and mindful of the hard work that teachers and administration puts into it, I just think it's important to note that, you know, we have made progress with our socioeconomically disadvantaged students. We have made progress, and that's not to say that further progress, you know, shouldn't be made, isn't possible. It certainly is possible, and we strive for it. Our students with disabilities have made excellent progress over the last 6 years, and we have continuing struggles with our English learner population, you know, which is a problem throughout the nation, across the state, the county, and ourselves. And we have identified that problem. And even if the test scores weren't indicating that to us, we see it. We know it's there. So the fact that, you know, that these scores are lower than we would like to see, it just sort of underscores something that we've already identified, that the board has instructed the administration to place an emphasis, to really prioritize achievement for our English language learners. We've tried to put as best we're able our money there, where our mouths are, and we look forward to greater progress. It's a very difficult situation, and I'm really grateful for everybody who's putting their best effort behind it. I think that we are just heartily committed to achievement for English language learners, and I know we're going to see it if we keep working as hard as we are. So thank you so much.
Thanks, Marilyn. Since I don't see any other lights lit up, we'll move on to the action consent portion of the agenda. I'll call out the item, and then if anyone on the board would like an item pulled for further discussion, please let me know. 6, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. 7, acceptance of donations. 8, disposition of surplus property. 9, approval of furniture and equipment requests. 10, approval of purchase orders. I would entertain a motion by someone on the board. That's fine, sure. We have a retro pull. We're going back.
I move approval of items 6, 7, 9, and 10.
Chris has made a motion to approve 6, 7, 9, and 10, seconded by properties.
Disposition of surplus property. Was there something there I wanted?
Yeah, the obsolete fax machine.
Can I speak for that obsolete fax machine?
Now that you've provided a moment of lightness at the meeting. Was it number?
It's actually 7.
Okay, you know what I'm going to do? We're gonna go back and have Mr. Unger make a motion for 6, 8, 9, and 10, and a second by Mr. Buckman, then we'll take the vote again.
Thank you.
I will move for approval of items 6 and 8, 9, and 10.
We have a motion and a second by Mark. Any further discussion? None. All in favor of that?
Aye.
Opposed? That passes 7-0. And now... Marilyn, you can
fax your response.
Number 7. Although I'm a little nervous to really pin you down to any particular item.
Okay.
But go ahead.
In the last meeting that we attended, I suddenly found myself in 1908. Do you remember that? Well, I just, you know, we are grateful for any donations that anyone wants to make to any of our schools, our IMC. We will take anything, and we we really appreciate it. I wanted to call particular attention only because, and this is a little self-serving, I guess, but on item 2, Miner's Ace Hardware of Arroyo Grande donated a significant amount in materials, $2,560 in lumber materials to the Industrial Arts Department at Los Osos Middle School. I wanted to note that, A, because it's a large donation, and B, because they are my employer, and they make it possible in many ways for me to do this job by accommodating my needs to absent myself from work. And so they support our schools in more ways than one, so I thank them for their donation and also for their generosity in allowing me to serve and in facilitating my serving on the board. And with that said, I'll move approval of item number 7.
We have a motion. I think we might have a comment. No. We have a motion by Marilyn, and we have a second by Chris on item number 7 is so well stated. Any further comments? Seeing none,
do you have the final word?
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Aye. Passes 7-0.
Thank you.
And we did one agenda item, a future item with the issue number 4 tonight, so we dealt with that. Now we have Chris, who has another one as soon as he turns on his microphone.
Oh, yeah. I would like us to...
You're still not on, Chris.
And I think... I don't know if it would save us any money or not. I know clearly it would save time and effort from having to duplicate the books, get the books out to us, that kind of thing. So I'd like to revisit that and see if it does make some sense to us, and that would be something that...
Chris, let me ask just for a second, and then we'll go. What format would you like to see that
Macintosh.
Addressed?
There are... Well, they
no pun intended.
They can be in Macintosh and PC format, but
all right,
I just
you guys stop teasing. Okay,
it's out there, and I think it's worth a look again. And
well, do you? I know what I was asking. Do you want to have it as a discussion item? Do you want to get information on the cost or the method?
I'd like perhaps the administration to kind of look at it as we did the last time and see if it's something that's even worth bringing back to the board. And I'd like Mrs. Holmes really her feedback on it because she would be the main person who'd be.
Do you want it in a Friday packet to begin with?
I think
with?
A Friday packet would be satisfying to me.
Sure. Okay, so we have a Friday packet
I'll
request.
Support that.
Or would you rather just find something burning on your front doorstep?
Well,
if it costs money, remember we have to take something out if we put this in. What are you willing to give up?
It's all a matter of finite resources and infinite ideas, Chris.
Okay, so I think what we have, cutting through the additional comments, is a Friday packet request. Let me make sure I've got this correct. A Friday packet request to discuss, identify the means and the cost of implementing a fully electronic board agenda and packet for board members and public?
Yes. I know there are boards that are doing it. Again, I don't know what the ultimate what the cost would be. I think it's worth looking at, though.
Do you know the boards that might be doing this in full
there
implementation?
There are about 20 or 30 boards in California that are doing it right now. Would you actually like me to name some? Because I sure can.
Well, I was just thinking if you're going to...
Okay, CSA so would we have that, for example. There are about 20 or 30.
All right.
And then there are other people that are doing it as well.
Chris, are you aware that people call you a technocrat behind your back?
Yes, and I'm proud of it. Nerd, as a matter of fact.
All right. Is there any other advanced agenda items, Dr. Valentine?
Well, just at the risk of being overly lengthy, I wanted to know if, Chris, you would participate in that review with us since you are experienced in this.
Yes.
Thank you. And...